This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Reynolds Price was a renowned figure in Southern literature. He grew up in rural North Carolina, spent most of his life in this state. His writing often explored themes of religion and identity. Here he is reading from his novel, The Surface of Earth.
Let me tell you this story that you don't understand. You'd have known it all your life if you'd ever woke up. We are very plain people. We're the history of the world. Nothing one bit unusual in any of our lives.
And that is a clip of Reynolds Price reading from his novel, The Surface of Earth, and there he was recorded in the 1994 documentary, Clear Pictures. Reynolds Price also taught English at Duke University for more than 50 years before he died in 2011. And he was a collector. He filled his house in Durham with sculptures, paintings, and other artifacts that reflected his many interests. A new book pairs photographs of his house with samples of his work. The book is called Dream of a House, The Passions and Preoccupations of Reynolds Price. Alex Harris and Margaret Sarter are the co-editors of the book, and they were longtime friends of Reynolds Price. They join me now. Welcome back, Alex and Margaret. Good to have you back.
Thanks to be here.
Tell us about the genesis of this project. Alex, maybe I'll start with you.
Well, the genesis really starts with Margaret walking around Reynolds Price's home. I was out of town. She was there with a young man who is as close to a son as Reynolds has on this planet,
this
Daniel Vohl.
Very soon after he died, by the way.
Yeah.
Pick up the story
from there.
I would just say that really the story begins with our friendship with Reynolds, and Reynolds was such an amazing person to be friends with. We were one of many people who benefited and loved him. But Daniel, before the house was dismantled, invited me to come over and walk through with him. And the profound experience of doing that really had to do with Reynolds' presence still being in the house. And we had lost him by then, but my experience of being in the house before had always been with Reynolds there. So Reynolds absorbed all the energy and all the attention. That day with Daniel, we really spoke about how the house was infused with the personality of Reynolds. I think in dream analysis, the house often becomes a symbol of the mind. And in many ways, this house, which Alex eventually photographed, quite literally reflected the rooms, the doors, the corners, the shelves of Reynolds's mind.
Well, tell us more about it. Describe at least some of it, because it was certainly, he collected a lot of things, beautiful things, right, Alex?
You walked into the house and the collection seemed so eclectic. Bookshelves of his first editions, paintings, landscapes of North and South Carolina that provided the settings of his novels, oil portraits of Reynolds himself, etchings from Blake and two from Abraham and Isaac by Rembrandt, sculptures, pictures of some of his heroes, including James Dean, Marlon Brando, John Keats. It seemed eclectic, and it was eclectic in a way, but it was so carefully curated. Every piece had a place on the wall or on the floor next to the wall, and they were meant to resonate with one another and create, in a sense, an audience, a group of spirits and beings that were always there with Reynolds.
And it certainly reflected the great capacity of his mind as an intellect, as an artist, and as a spiritual seeker. Margaret, maybe this is the moment where we take one step back. It has been 6 years since we lost him to remind us about this formidable character in American literature.
Quite formidable. And Reynolds, in every genre of writing, produced works of art that I think will live forever in poetry, playwriting, nonfiction, apologetics, and of course his fiction, which is probably what he's most well known for. He also started out as a child drawing and painting. So he did continue to draw and paint, and around his house, what Alex didn't mention is some of those drawings he did when he was recovering from cancer, and some of his best known works include writing about a whole new life after suffering cancer and becoming paraplegic. One thing, and I'll let Alex add to Reynolds' legacy, which is so important, and I think part of the reason why we felt inspired to do this book, but also this home that Reynolds inhabited. He inhabited the same home since 1967. So Reynolds was born here in North Carolina and moved into this house with the money he made from his first novel in his 20s. A Long and Happy Life was the title of that novel. He taught at Duke, but he called that house an important socket into the earth for him. So the accumulation wasn't something that happened over 5 years or even 10 years. It happened over, what was it, Alex, he lived in that house for?
35, 40 years, but some of the pieces he collected as a child.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
And again, nothing is unintentional when it comes to Reynolds Price. You can imagine living in a house for 35 years, the amount of stuff that you'd have all over the place. But this really does reflect a man's love of art and as well as other sort of intellectual enterprises. Tell us what you give us again a little sense of what you saw and how maybe the bigger question here for you, Alex, is how do you go about trying to capture this in the frame of a photograph?
Well, by the time I arrived at Reynolds' house in 2011, February of 2011, a month after he died, I really felt like I'd been training for this moment for a long time because I had photographed in places like Inuit villages of Alaska, Hispanic villages in northern New Mexico. And Frank, I'd learned to make two kinds of portraits, a portrait in which people appear, but then later portraits that were originally the backgrounds to my photographs in which people do not appear. And there's a way in which I saw that people could be defined by the objects they touched or used or arranged or collected over the years. And so by the time I arrived at Reynolds' house, at first I set out almost like a visual archivist. I wanted to make sure I covered everything that was there in the space he lived in. I made kind of broad views of several of his primary rooms, his bedroom, his office, the living room, the kitchen. But then what Margaret described as Reynolds' spirit being in the house, I began to pay attention to the individual sculptures and paintings and photographs, his wall of heroes, the people who he said that he created most of his work for, family, friends, people who he never knew but who were heroes of his. And I think there's a way in which those objects began to emanate their own, they came alive in a way. And I began to pay attention to what might have drawn Reynolds to those individual pieces.
And I was just going to say, Alex, Reynolds was the perfect subject for you, and you were the perfect documenter for him, because some people you had to find the one place in their home where it was a portrait of them. Mm-hmm. But Reynolds consciously created a portrait, a self-portrait, really, in his house, meticulously, carefully, at every corner. So you had to find the right angle, the right perspective. But he had already sort of curated it, and it was a portrait that had evolved over time. So I just wanted to add that.
Yeah. Well, tell me more about that and what you might have found, because the thing that always amazed me about him was that he talked and wrote about this numinous experience. He called it his first experience of God as a young man, when everything sort of became one and he was part of it, and that has lived with him in his writing. He is also a man of powerful intellect, and those things were never at war in him. His intellect, he never felt that he had to make a choice between his ability as a critic, as an intellect, and as someone who understood Western culture, and someone who had a deep regard for the spiritual world, his socket into the earth, as you would say. When you walk into a room, is there evidence, in terms of the placement, in terms of how he had arranged and curated his art, Alex, give us a sense of what you learn about a man just by looking at how he had arranged those things.
You know, there's so much that I noticed that I hadn't noticed before, because, again, when you're there with Reynolds, you focused on Reynolds. And just a very small thing, I think, is worth mentioning, that in his kitchen, directly across from the stove, there were two portraits that were leaning against one another. And in one portrait, on the left-hand side, was Daniel Vohl, who was the young man who came and lived with him after he was diagnosed with cancer and saw him through that first year. And in the other portrait, it's Reynolds with his oldest friend from Oxford, who remains his good friends, with a great North Carolina named Michael Jordan. And somehow those two portraits were leaning against each other in a way that placed Reynolds between his two best friends. And if you looked at things on the walls, you would really begin to see the purposeful way that he arranged things.
Margaret, tell us more about the decision to pair these photographs with excerpts from his writing.
Yes, well, step number one was Alex made something like 700 pictures, visited the house six or seven times. And then we began to read basically everything Reynolds had ever written and his interviews, and then choose things from those writings that we felt might resonate with the pictures. The next step was sort of to put them with the pictures and just to see what happened, what chemistry sort of occurred. And there was a heartbeat there. We saw that there was something there, but it needed refinement. And over a period of quite a long time, we saw Reynolds' own story sort of emerge, which he tells through his words and Alex's photographs. So it really begins with his childhood and moves through his life and who he was and what he cared about, right until till the part where he writes about leaving this world. And it was kind of a show and tell, allowing Reynolds to both show with his house and tell with his words. And then we put ourselves sort of in the back of the book, text by us. But I feel like it's Reynolds's book in many ways.
Well, I'm talking with Alex Harris and Margaret Sartor, who are the editors of the book, Dream of a House. There's also an exhibit at the Rubenstein Gallery at the library on the campus of Duke, and you can see that. And we've got the photos on our website. Maybe we should start and describe a few of them. Maybe you can tell us what's going on in this photo, Alex.
What page are you on?
Well, page? I'm on page 17. The photo's on 17. The text is on 16. And he's talking about the founding of the text, of course, is where he refers to the Bible. But this is...
Well, what's fascinating about this wall for me is that when you went to visit Reynolds Price, and this isn't just Margaret and me, it's any of his friends, you sat in two leather Barcelona chairs, and you faced this wall. But in some ways, I hadn't really seen it because Reynolds was always next to the piano, and we would be looking at him and talking to him. And then after he was gone, I wanted to start with this wall because it contains so much beautiful art and sculpture and. Many of the landscapes of North Carolina and other parts of the South and the country that Reynolds wrote about were there on the walls.
Plaster casts from Michelangelo's David of the lips and of the foot. There's a picture of Emily Dickinson.
There's
a
sculpture.
Bust of Shakespeare. Mm-hmm.
And the text that on the facing page reads, "In the founding text of our civilization, the Hebrew Christian Bible, a spot is sacred forever after if God or an angel has deigned to touch it. For most of us, the chance of hallowing a place is through human means. The sight of intense and or prolonged human feeling becomes special for us," and that is from Homeless Home, from mm-hmm. Reynolds Price's own work. So again, this love of culture, but also a kind of the spiritual value and why anyone would even bother to be a writer is sort of always evident in his work.
Yes.
The project itself has been a long time coming. In fact, the house is no longer the way it was, right? You took these photos back in 2011, shortly after he passed away.
That's right. The house was, I think that a decision was made by Duke and the family that the house would be, wouldn't be preserved in its entirety, and different pieces went to different people in the family. But we feel in a way like we've created a home here in this book that and one wonderful thing about it is that this is a home to which we can always return. But the house itself is no longer inhabited by Reynolds or his artwork.
He had a deep interest in antique Western culture, but also pop culture and an interest in movie stars like James Dean. What do you think he saw Alex, I'll stick with you in movie icons like James Dean.
I think Reynolds had such ambition for himself for greatness, and he was inspired by greatness and the presence of movie stars like James Dean and Marlon Brando and so many others. And what was fascinating to see those portraits of those movie stars next to religious icons, next to other what he called his heroes. And he talked about and wrote about this idea of heroes represent something that show us how to have special strength and how to go on in the world. And they inspired him.
It's interesting, Margaret, to think about his career and, the sheer capacity and variety of his work. But someone who spent most of his life, I think maybe only that time in Oxford, and if there was other time, I don't know.
No.
Here in North, he belonged to the world for sure, but we still call him North Carolina writer Reynolds Price. He really was anchored in the soil of North Carolina.
Reynolds would say that movement can only be judged in stasis. To be from a place and in the place that he was writing about was very important to him. You know, referring to him as a North Carolina writer is misleading in some ways. North Carolina, the people of North Carolina were those he knew the best. This was the world he knew, so it's where he started from. It was the port from which he set out, so to speak. But he was writing about things that were common to anyone in the world or anyone who'd lived. And I think he understood, he taught me that one begins with oneself and one's own story in trying to talk about the larger things that make us human.
Yeah, he found the universal in those particular people that he had come to know so well. Also someone who had a great devotion to nature and who, ironically, once he was confined to a wheelchair, spent most of his time indoors. And yet, even that indoor landscape was reflected the outdoors. Tell us about his landscapes and other portraits and paintings on the wall.
Well, I think in Reynolds, in one of his memoirs, probably, I think it's in his first one, Clear Pictures, he writes about his first experience of God, really, of spirituality, was as a young child, maybe 7 or 8, in the woods. And he says, most of my deepest experiences spiritual experiences happened in the outdoors. He called himself a religious person, not a church-going person. I do think the Judaic Christian tradition was the underlying structure of his life, but the world was what he loved. And so once he was in a wheelchair, he did create more. I think he began to collect more and more landscapes. And they're all beautiful classical landscapes, but they might be of laundry over. I remember one picture of it was a back door of a house with a laundry line. And I believe John Bierman was represented on his walls. Alex Harris was represented on his walls. Other artists from around here, but also he had these sculptures, and he had a Greek sculptures, and so I believe that landscape could be stretched for him. It was both the physical landscape and then the landscape of the mind that he was representing in the artwork on his walls.
Well, the good news is we have the book, and it's a beautiful book to take with us. But in the meantime, there is also an exhibit at the Rubenstein Library at Duke on display for a while, and I think through November 5th. Is that right?
That's right, and we'll be there tomorrow night to kind of have an opening celebration with a clip from the film that you played voice from, as well as Reynolds' brother, Michael Jordan, Margaret, and I. And so we're hoping to sort of have an event that really brings Reynolds back to Duke campus.
I'd like to think of it as a celebration.
Yes.
Alex Harris and Margaret Sartor are co-editors of the book Dream of a House, The Passions and Preoccupations of Reynolds Price, and they will be speaking at a reception tomorrow at the David M. Rubenstein Library at Duke University. The book's photographs are on display through November 5th. Alex, Margaret, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank.
Coming up, a young adult trilogy that is being compared to The Hunger Games. We'll look at Volume 1 in a moment. Stay tuned.